Anyway, as we were saying earlier in the show, we have been away for 2 weeks, once because of a big typhoon, which meant we couldn't get to studio.
Yep.
But then last week, we were travelling the world. We went to London. We watched the Bat Out of Hell musical.
Less said about that, the better.
It's interesting. I don't really know why we did that.
You wanted to.
Yeah, I guess. Then we went to Munich for Oktoberfest, but we discovered when we were putting together our plans for Oktoberfest that one of our favourite bands, They Might Be Giants,
happened to be visiting the city that same week.
On a European tour.
Yes.
And they're in Munich the same week, so we actually switched flights so we could get there a little bit earlier to go and speak to them. Now, They Might Be Giants have been around for a long time. The band is John Flansburgh and John Linnell.
And they started the band in 1982.
82. Where obviously the most famous song is Birdhouse in Your Soul.
Yeah, probably
which I think everyone knows.
Yeah.
But they've been performing for years and years and years and doing some very, very interesting things. We're going to play our interview with them in just a second, and it is a long one. It's half an hour.
It is, but I think they're very interesting to listen to.
They are. But,
and they were very interested in Hong Kong. There's a whole other bit before we started recording the interview where they said, can we ask you some questions first?
In Hong Kong. it's interesting. Moment. We're still here.
Yes.
Which is always good. But one of the things that they're doing at the moment, years ago they did something called Dial-A-Song, where you'd phone
an answer machine in Brooklyn
to hear their new song.
Yeah.
And it was very cool. And it was free if you dialed from work, apparently.
As they may have tagged it at certain times,
I guess these days you could use, Skype or something?
Probably.
WhatsApp? Don't know how it works. Obviously, I'm technically challenged. But they're doing Dial-A-Song Direct all through this year.
Which means 52 songs.
52 songs. You can go to the Dial-A-Song Direct website, They Might Be Giants. Listen to the songs. And if you become a member, you can download them and listen to them. Now, I am a member, and I've been downloading and listening to them. And indeed, we've played quite a lot of them this very show. But 2 weeks ago, and sadly, we were going to play it in the Typhoon Week, but we couldn't get here. They released a song on Dial-A-Song, which almost feels like it was made for this show here in Hong Kong. So we'll play that first, and then we'll speak to the band. This is They Might Be Giants with The Communists Have the Music. I got handed an Ayn Rand sandwich straight from the can. We are in Munich with They Might Be Giants. Guys, welcome to the show. Well, when this goes out, welcome to the show.
Yeah. It's great to be live on the air.
Yes, live from a Munich car park.
Yes.
In your delightful tour bus, we've been escorted upstairs in the plush
proceedings. Yeah, it's not. I mean, you're being sincere, I assume. It's okay. I mean,
this is the nicest UK tour bus we've ever had. In the United States, they allow buses to get very, very wide and very, very tall.
Yeah.
In the UK and Europe, I guess because they're narrower roads, older roads.
Yes.
They're much more restricted, and also, it seemed for many decades, UK rock bands did not believe in flushing the toilet. So that seemed problematic for, they were just very, very, it was like being in a bar that was moving down the road.
And not in a dive bar.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm with you on the hygiene issue.
Yeah. So this is a big relief.
That you've got this.
Yeah, this is a really nice one.
It's fine. Civilized.
You're going to be in this bus for a while. You've just started quite a full-on tour.
Oh, just a couple of weeks. Like 3 weeks, I guess.
Well, you're in the UK.
Yes.
Germany now. Then back to
Canada and the United States. We're actually doing like 8 shows in Canada, which is probably a mistake. Well, we don't really play Canada very often, and so it's just kind of seeing what will happen.
Okay. I've never been.
I've not been.
This is, we played in dates in Canada, but this is literally the first time we've ever done an actual tour of Canada in 30 years of touring.
Yeah.
Because you guys have been together a long time.
We have, and we've been touring for most of that time. And it's hard to tour Canada because there's a lot of distances. Yeah, mm-hmm. But I think this will be good. I think this is going to be fine.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting setup that you've chosen because you're doing this whole thing of there's no support band, you're just going to do 2 sets. Now, I guess this allows you to pick from like a wide variety of
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a little bit selfish for us because we actually get the crowd like right out of the, maybe they don't have that much like booze in them, but they are very wide awake, and that's nice for us. A lot of times in the past, we've gone on very late, and it's even just as we hit the stage, you can tell the crowd's a little bit fatigued, and you kind of have to like wake them up. But this is just, you know, it's just nice. It's nice. We've got the material. It's fun. It's fun to play a long show.
You certainly have plenty of material.
Yeah.
So 20 albums.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I Like Fun came out earlier this year. It was on one of our albums of the week.
It was.
Thank you.
So it's good, really good album. But you're also doing Dial-A-Song.
Yes.
How is that, for those who, if you've been listening to the show, you'll have heard us playing Dial-A-Song tracks, a new one pretty much every week. How do you keep the momentum going?
Well, Dial-A-Song is overlapping with the releases that we're doing. In other words, I Like Fun has come out in Dial-A-Song form as well, and we've recorded a backlog of material before. You know, it's a thing that takes place over the course of a year, and it's a weekly thing. So that's 52 songs, which is a lot. It is a lot now that I'm saying it out loud. But we prepared a lot in advance, and I think we've got the rest of the year taking care.
I've got some work.
We might have to make up some songs in there for December. But I think we're mostly covered.
I was going to say, we particularly liked last week's song, having spoken ahead of the interview about
Hong Kong.
Hong Kong.
So last week was the communist type
communist
of music.
Type of music. How appropriate. Yeah, yeah.
What is that song about?
Yeah. Well, it's a good question. We haven't got a comprehensive response yet. I think it was more like this exciting idea for a song, and we can't quite explain ourselves yet. But it's just mainly about making those political choices based on the who has the best songs. Actually, it did occur to me that there was this expression that we bandied around in high school, which was, we'd say, comparing two bands, this band has the power and this band has the tunes. Do you remember?
Oh,
that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
that
yeah.
was this idea of like, you'd yeah. like both of them, but this one, they have these different strengths.
You would say the Sex Pistols have the power, but, you know, the Clash has the tunes.
The tunes, right, exactly. Would be an example.
Okay.
Yeah. So in this case, the fascists have the power and the communists have the tunes.
They have the outfits.
Yeah. and they have the outfits. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's sort of style over substance, I guess, would be the idea.
Style versus substance.
Style versus substance.
Yes.
No, yeah. Over substance. No, I agree.
We're not advocating.
We're advocating substance.
Because we in Hong Kong, we... Has it been passed yet? I don't think so, because we'd be in jail.
There's a law that you have to respect the Chinese.
The national anthem. So when it comes on, you have to respect it. And if you don't, you go to jail.
What does it mean by... what does respect mean?
Stop what you're doing. Solemnly either sing along, but in tune. I get the feeling if you're out of tune,
yes.
That's still jail.
Interesting. Well, so we have a similar law, which is you have to respect They Might Be Giants. when we're performing, you have to face the stage
and
stop whatever else
yes.
you're doing.
Yeah, or you get ejected from the venue.
Well, not necessarily. No. But you'll feel bad. I think that's the penalty is we will be sad.
Right.
Yeah, and we don't want you to be sad.
Nobody wants that.
Publicly shunned.
Nobody wants to see that.
How do you deal with it? Because gigs, people do talk through it. I remember for years, when I was much younger, people would just talk through it. I go and see my favorite band.
Well, I think you have to raise your ticket prices. It's probably the key.
Just get the full read.
Yeah, people are really into it. And I mean, the truth is, like, we're very spoiled in terms of how much attention people pay to us. And one of the things that was really jarring and slightly disappointing about doing shows for kids was how little they cared about our celebrity.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think they realized that they were, you know, that they were in the, pres-
they would,
in the presence they would, of greatness.
Genius.
Those kids would all be in jail if this were China. All of them.
Now, but will you be doing some of your kids' tunes?
Just only a couple of them really make that much sense. I mean, I'm not sure there are any songs that were officially kids' songs. It's I mean, for we have done Alphabet of Nations, and we've done like Clap Your Hands.
We've played Particle Man,
and we played
Particle. But it always feels like oddly inappropriate to talk about someone who's clinically depressed in a song for children. But for some reason, kids like that song. So
maybe you're not reading too much into it.
Maybe not.
Now we
they just like the tunes.
Yeah, they do. We get to hear. So when we're getting ready to do the show every week on a Sunday, the show before us is a kids' show, and I'd say most weeks one of your tracks gets played.
You get a high hit rate.
That's a lot of weeks.
So we're always
sounds
like
we can play in this church at the least.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can come to the Vine Center and play. We can do a kids' show and then
a matinee for the kids. Yeah.
But it's always frustrating because we're like, oh, we want to play a track, but then straight after we
have to wait a little while. Till later in our show.
Assuming people are listening to the kids' show as well as us, I don't know. Maybe the kids are switching off when we come on. Now, in terms of the amount of songs that you have, we're saying there's loads. Where do you get your inspiration from? Because as a band, the stuff that you sing about, the songs you write, there's literally any subject. There's things that you wouldn't even think about covering.
Well, there are. I mean, I think the thing is, we don't. You'd be amazed at how hard it is for us to write songs. A lot of it is, I think, thinking of an idea and then rejecting it. Like, that's most of my day, basically. It's like, you know. So I think it is partly, you know, that the opposite of the thing you're suggesting, which is like, most subjects are not interesting, occasionally you find one that seems interesting.
And some subjects are like worth writing about, but they're really hard to write about in an interesting way. Right. I mean, I think like especially as we get older, you know, there's kind of like these complicated ideas about like, I mean, adult disappointment has so little drama to it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, adult disappointment is such a small and dull thing, and yet it is something that I think, you know, if you are an adult, it's something you want to figure out how to write about. In the same way, like when we started, I think we wanted to write love songs, you know, not out of just like the emotional necessity of writing love songs, but also it is like a great kind of song. I mean, it's a really relatable song. It's a kind of song that is certainly a great tradition of great, powerful, interesting, surprising love songs. But I think it was just very tricky. It just seemed sort of hard, and I think we just kind of avoided it. For the most part, I mean, there are a couple of, you know, solid exceptions, but
I think we avoid cliches, and that's the there's a Martin Amis book called something like The War Against Cliché.
Yeah,
I forget.
Yeah.
But it seems like that's a frame of mind that obviously a lot of people share.
I don't know any other bands who would say do a song about the Mesopotamians, for example. I can't think of any other bands.
Well, there is, actually. There's the B-52s did a
song.
And it was before our song.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're just copying the B-52s. You got to check them out.
I bet they're okay.
Yeah, it was actually a record. It was an EP produced by David Byrne.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
And it has a lot of drum machines on it, which is very very proto Big 80s in a way, and very not like the B-52s.
Yeah, yeah. Unusual for them.
David Byrne's influence. He's coming to Hong Kong, incidentally, in November.
See, he gets to go to Hong Kong.
He gets to go. You need to hook up with him.
Mr. Big Shot over there.
Tell him we said hi.
We'll do. We've both been to him.
We've both been to him, obviously.
You never know.
You never know.
It's entirely possible.
You certainly could. He's pretty... He's an affable dude.
He is. Obviously, all these songs are coming up, but you're avoiding the love songs. Who influences you apart from obviously the B-52s?
The Beatles, I would say.
I mean, I think historically, you know, we came up at a very specific time, and you can kind of see, you can kind of see a lot of the things affecting us almost at the same in equal amounts. Like, you know, Elvis Costello happened in like 1977. Yeah. I saw Elvis Costello when I was in London that summer. And, it, you know, like, I probably sent a postcard back to Linnell saying, like, I saw this guy. He's going to blow your mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was, like, very enthusiastic. And just all that first wave of New York bands who are all really different from each other. You know, it's not, you know, people kind of just say like, oh, I'm really into punk rock, and you just go like, and by that I mean the Ramones, ergo parentheses heavy metal. You know, and it's like, it's not really like that. I mean, if you actually, if you were into that kind of stuff, what was interesting about it as a movement was just the amount of musical diversity. That they, there were a lot of short songs and a lot of melodic songs, but they were kind of coming from, some of them were more like Blondie, or you know, was obviously like very 60s influence, but it'd been like Television, or even like Richard Hell and the Voidoids. I mean, those are like, those are some real, you know, crazy bands. You know, like, they got some weird ideas that like are just seem very original and really open things up for us. I mean, we were, you know, just growing up with the radio. You, at that moment, it was like Linda Ronstadt and the Eagles and some very kind of safe stuff that seems very safe in comparison.
Right. So. I guess what's funny is, like, at that, when we were in high school, it seemed like the appealing music was this sort of what at one time was called underground rock and became alternative rock. And then it's sort of like it got safe to like pop music again after that. Pop music had been really fun and good in the 60s, and then it was toxic and horrible when we were teenagers, right?
Yeah.
And then I feel like, and then maybe ABBA snuck in there as like the one poppy thing that you could get behind.
Yeah, we in the UK, we had, because we obviously lived in the UK until we moved to Hong Kong, so we had the 80s, which was a complete...
I think everybody had the 80s.
Yeah, but in terms of...
I know what you mean.
I know what you're saying.
Some people missed out the 80s completely if they had a good 70s.
I think a lot of people in the United States really skipped over the 80s. I mean, you think about
their 80s was Heart. You know,
and stuff
like that, or the Aerosmith,
rock,
things that didn't seem that was like that. That was the 80s.
We had Boy George and I guess loads, Human League,
everything. Basically, a lot of people got a lot of synthesizers and drum machines, and it all exploded.
I
think things kept moving much further along in the UK. A friend of mine is very much fixated on that sort of new romantic moment. He like collects all these like one word band name records by, you know, and you know, he'll play me stuff, and to me I'll just be like, wow, you know, I really wish they had autotune back then, you know, because it would have made this so much more exciting.
The monolithic 80s is actually, it's similar in a way to the sort of revisionist idea about the 50s that we grew up with, which was there was this one kind of music in the 50s, and we very quickly discovered that was not true at all, and there was a lot of really interesting stuff that didn't become part of the official Rolling Stone history of the 50s. And
well, just
similarly,
all the stuff that's not rock and roll music.
Yeah, basically anything,
you know,
that was...
I mean, there was a lot of people listening to, you know, bebop and even things like,
well,
I mean,
the four lads was the example that struck us.
Pre-rock.
Yeah, like, yeah, things like that were interesting and exciting, but utterly square and not considered to be important, you know, seemed very compelling. And I think in a similar way, like now in the 80s, you look back and you go, oh yeah, there was Tom Waits or just some other thing that was not part of the dreary...
what everyone was
monolith.
Listening to, but he was still churning out the about to say the hits, but not the hits. You know what I mean?
Yes.
The non-hits.
The Tom Waits hits.
Do you continue to get inspired by bands that are around now? Is there sort of like anyone that you're like really, really enjoying listening to?
You know, I mean, I listen to the charts, and I listen to hip hop radio in New York when my wife isn't in the car, because she cannot take it. I think it's funny, this moment we live in now, because there isn't the ubiquity of pop music just kind of coming out of every corner. Like, I think everybody gets to choose whatever they want now, and everyone's a little bit siloed off. I probably know a fair amount more about, like, you know, Kanye West's output or Pharrell's output than people would think. You know, one of the guys, and they might be Giants, might. But for me, it's more about this. It's like actually the sonics of it that I kind of dig. I mean, it's just, it's such powerful sounding, you know. They've got the power.
Yeah, they do.
They have the power.
I mean, in terms of exposure and finding new fans, people listen to music, do you think it's harder now? Because obviously Spotify, everyone uses Spotify.
I got the impression it's almost impossible. I mean, when you know, people say, like, you know, do you have any advice for, you know, new bands? It's like, be an older band. You'll do a lot better.
Get a time machine.
I mean, I just think it's very hard to mint new fans for new acts because they just don't get a lot of access. You know, things were so rigged when we came up. It was very hard to kind of get into, you know, we had to convince a lot of people that our like carefree joke band was a serious non-joke band. And once we fooled them, then we were given access to the world. I don't think we're a joke band, but I think our intentions were so kooky and personal, and the world was so. I mean, I remember very specifically when we were first got signed to Elektra, it did seem like a little bit of a Trojan horse. Like, we had to. There are people there who really felt like we should be more serious, and it was sort of like, well, part of what we're doing is perfectly serious, and
we, you wouldn't believe how seriously we take ourselves.
Yeah,
like, you'd be so turned off if you realized how serious we think we are.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And so there's also the other balancing act, which is the, you know, we're trying to do this no fun music, but make it fun for people. You know, so it's yeah, you just got to keep moving really fast, so it looks like there's multiple bands.
So they people can't zero in on what's exactly the real band. I do think it is really difficult. I mean, we, in terms of new music, where we find songs that we love and we play on the show, and inevitably I'll say, this is going to be huge, it's great,
and it goes nowhere, and then because nobody, it doesn't appear on a Spotify playlist, so people aren't kind of spoon-fed
right. Well, this, you know, Spotify, I mean, in many ways Spotify is probably just, those playlists are probably very parallel in the culture to airplay on MTV, or MTV being on, I mean, MTV as being like the culture moving thing. Like, if you could be an unknown band, start getting seen on MTV, and then all of a sudden you're like a regular legitimate band. And that's, I mean, that was very much our story. I mean, we, that was the side door that we entered through. And I guess, you know, for some, I mean, the Spotify playlist is strange though, because did you hear this? This is totally just gossip, but there's this Spotify, there are these Spotify playlists for easy listening that include easy listening tracks that are not commercially available anywhere else.
All fake music.
Basically hired a bunch of like Swedish, music producers to do tracks that would sort of fit to fill this kind of playlist. That was, the playlist itself is extremely popular because it's basically background music, people are just like, hey, you know, I'm running this business, I'm going to be playing Spotify, I need something that's not going to disturb people. And they literally didn't have enough content to fill the playlist that was, you know, appropriately snoozy enough. And so they hired these like Swedish guys, or paid these Swedish guys to make this kind of easy listening music. And then it started getting a fan base, and people were like, I love this band. I love ZZZZZ. And, you know, where can I get this great, sleepy record? And and Spotify got busted because of it, their own popularity.
It's a
fascinating and weird idea.
What a story.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
But, yeah, the playlist thing, you know. Well, I'm curious what bands you think are going to break out. Like, what are your current bands?
Probably the Kiss of Death for them. Bands who I think are going, maybe they won't be huge, but bands who I've really enjoyed what they put out. There's a band called Super Organism. Have you heard of them?
Mm-hmm.
They're very good. Their album is really, really good.
You're obsessed with that at the moment.
It's probably one of my favorites of the year.
Cool. Yeah.
So check that out. The album is really, really good. Who else did we like?
I really like Confidence Man this year.
Oh yeah, Confidence Man is like very sassy
Australian band.
Australian dance pop.
Uh-huh.
but very. It doesn't take itself too seriously, basically, which we like, which is very good.
Right.
Who were that? Who was that other band? It was the Fernway? Who do that folk?
The Fernway, who sound very much like they could be from the 60s, like the Move, the British band.
Oh,
Move.
Wow!
But just such a great tune, and I only know the one song, and you know they were getting quite a lot of play on a UK radio station, and we were like, we must play this record. We love it.
Yeah. The other night we were playing, you know, another band playing across town was this band, the Goon Sax. Have you heard them?
Oh, yeah. Great.
I love that home haircut song.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not like the slickest music in the world, but it's kind of a great song.
It's very much the sort of music that if I was making music growing up, it's the sort of thing that I would have wanted to be making.
It's very
self-aware team thing.
Well, this home haircut song is just about how, like, cutting your hair at home never works out.
Well, it
out.
Sounds like very self-referential.
Yeah.
Which I can vouch for. I cut my own hair. I mean, it was a disaster.
Well, you could see instead of not.
I created eye holes because it was getting too long.
Right.
I thought that would be fine. And when I went to school, I discovered that wasn't a cool thing to do. Never mind. Now I'm just glad I have hair at all, so I shouldn't really complain too much. In terms of, we were talking about Spotify, everything now is about media presence, and basically being on YouTube, creating a brand. But you guys have been doing that forever, creating videos.
Well, we have this advantage that we became a brand a long time ago, so in some ways, you know, it's never been cool, but...
but you've been at the forefront with, like, some interesting technology things, of, like, making your songs available as, like, MP3s and things like that.
Well, you know, and we never felt like we were. I mean, I think it's true. We were just generally very open to anything, and partly because we'd started out as a two-piece, so we weren't kind of... There wasn't a really, like, obvious way we were supposed to be doing stuff. So... We were willing to try out a lot of stuff, and I guess, you know, for the most part, it worked out okay. Like we were not saying no to a lot of.
I mean, for stuff like that, I think, you know, when it came to emerging technologies and just getting our music onto other platforms, our general attitude was like, say yes, like what, because there is an advantage to being the first in on a thing like. We know this guy John Hodgman, he was the voice of the Apple or the PC computer in the Apple ad campaign, and he's an actor and a comedian. He does like these. He's a monologuist in the United States, and he was very early in on Twitter, and now has like 1.5 million followers. And you know, as an established act, you know, I can tell you it is very difficult to get over 100,000 followers. I mean, unless you're really pouring a lot of information and maybe too much information about yourself into Twitter, it's just like there's kind of a natural governor on how big that gets. But because he was there at the very from the jump, he just got very, very followed on that thing, and it's it's been really beneficial for him. I don't think anything like that happened for us. I mean, being in early on MP3s didn't really help us. I can say we did dodge the CD-ROM time-wasting bullet, which the record company was very eager for us to get involved in. I think because it would, our unrecoupable funds would, maybe figure out some stuff for some other future endeavors, you know. But it just seemed like too... abstract. It just didn't seem like it had an audience, and sure enough, it didn't.
And it was going to be a lot of work.
It was
10 times as much work as making a record, which for us is like making records is such a good deal.
Right, we already have a job.
I won't be doing the rest.
You don't need to do this too.
Yeah. When you do, because on your YouTube account, Particle Men, there are all loads of videos for loads and loads of songs. Who does the videos? Because they're all really different and really interesting.
Oh, we have a huge group. One nice thing about being, you know, an act in this sort of this new century is there's so many more people, graphic art, you know, motion graphic people and animators and just people involved in who are interested in making. Videos for bands, and like, you know, because we had a little bit of a reputation, if we ask someone if they're interested, it's like you have you know, you don't have a ton of time. We have almost no dough. Can you do your best work for us? And, like, surprisingly, a lot of people say yes. Right. You know, but a lot of times it's like, you know, it'll be kind of a resume piece. Like, you know, there was a band called Tiny Inventions did a video for our song Electric Car. And there's actually, I would point people to the, so there's a video of the making of the video of Electric Car, and I can safely attest that they spent a lot more time making the video than we did making the song, and it's a really, you know, it's a really cool video, and they ended up getting all sorts of commercial work from it just because it's so cool.
It does seem like it's a lot cheaper to do nice looking stuff than it was 30 years ago, and I mean, obviously, ideas are just as expensive as they ever were. But for some reason, those early videos to me are so much less compelling, you know, generally than stuff that these hungry young people come up with now.
And it's often an interesting take on it. I mean, the Lake Monster video that that's this week's style of song. So we were watching that on the way here.
In the airport.
I was like, oh, Lake Monsters. And I was like, oh, somebody put that together, and it looks like it's like a tapestry.
It's hand embroidered.
It's actually
embroidered. It is computer animated, but the subject matter that is moving around in the animation is all hand done.
It
took her six months to do.
Yeah.
I mean, we brought her.
Like I said, like, it could be easy, but you could also make it. You can make it hard.
Yeah. We brought her in to do that video before the record was even out, and she was like, "This is going to take me a really long time. I hope it's okay." And it's like, "Yeah, fine." She's done lots of things. I mean, a number of things for us, and she always does really interesting, very obsessive, personal stuff. Yeah,
it's so cool. Do you think we maybe? I don't know.
Oh, we probably have.
You gotta go.
Oh, yeah,
you
we gotta go
to
our
thing.
Yeah.
Our sound check is going to be now.
Okay.
Well, thanks for coming. I hope you didn't come all this way just to talk to us, but I imagine
we definitely added an extra day.
That's great.
So, so nice.
We knew that we had to be
where
in
are
Munich.
Where else are you traveling?
So after Munich, it's back to Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. So we're in the UK
until today.
We went to see the Bat Out of Hell musical last night.
Wow.
That was quite an experience.
Couldn't really explain it.
Yeah.
It was just a lot of
So are you picking this one as a hit? This is going to be the next big thing.
Apparently it won an award, but I couldn't tell you what the plot was.
No, I have no idea what the story actually was.
Well, there's a bat.
Bat and it emerges.
The bicycle turned into a beating heart and
then there's a lot of
glass
Simon,
of wine and just hoped for the best.
So we were
in London. And then here we're going to Oktoberfest. So you were here for Oktoberfest.
We won't be. We'll be playing,
thing.
And then we're leaving tonight. Yeah. So yeah.
But when we saw,
we randomly spotted that you were playing. I think it came through the mailing list that you were touring. I was like, hang on, I'm pretty sure that's the day before we're going to be in Munich.
Oh,
so
great.
We came early.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, great.
Well, it's a cool city.
Yeah,
it's great. It's really nice. Place.
There is a beer garden that's open right over there. Yeah,
we've got like three suitcases in the venue.
You can leave them behind the soundboard.
Well, guys, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Nice to meet you guys.
Pleasure.
I sincerely want us to go to Hong Kong one day. I mean, I hope it's sooner than later. You know.